Good morning. This shiur is dedicated in memory of Rachel Bat Moshe, mother of Jackie Kramer, and today is her yahrzeit. You should be a melitza yeshes, as al haben alichtig gan eden, and heinish matatz ruda betzorachayim. We're in Nehemiah chapter 9, and I've been told we got up to Pasuk 25. Nehemiah is in the process of a great prayer, and we're going to see that this great prayer of Nehemiah is going to introduce us to another dimension of Nehemiah, which is going to become even more intensified when we go into the next chapter. He has gathered, at the beginning of chapter 8, it says that he had gathered all of the people to the courtyard that was before the water gate. Ezra had read from the Sefer Torah, and then now we're talking in chapter 9. There was another gathering which took place after Sukkot. They had, chapter 8, we were told that they had celebrated a special Sukkot, a kind of Sukkot that they had not celebrated since the days of Yeshua ben Nun. And then on the 24th day of the month, that's the beginning of chapter 9, it becomes a day after Yom Tov is over and after Yisroel Chag. It becomes a day of fasting and sackcloth, and they read the Torah. And I mean, it's not clear precisely who's saying it all. It's a joint prayer of Klal Yisrael. But this joint prayer, we will see in the next chapter, is going to be translated into action by Nehemiah. And in this prayer, they describe Jewish history. Everything from Mitzrayim to Yitzias Mitzrayim to going through the desert. Everything that takes place. And the fact that God wants to bring the Jewish people to the land, to Eretz Yisrael. He promised them the land, and he will bring them, and they sin, and then they again turn toward God. It had even begun, as we pointed out, with the story of Avraham Avinu. The Rebbeinu, you took him out of your custom, and you called his name Avraham. You made a covenant with him. And going all the way back to that original covenant with Avraham, there's going to be a renewed covenant that's going to be made.
No.
And as it continues, it tells us Jewish history.
Can I start just with 24? One pasuk back.
Only one pasuk. Vayavo habonim. The children came. The children of those who had gone out of Egypt, they came
by Yeshua to Haaretz,
they inherited the land. But Tachmalith Mermit Yoshneh Haaretz Haknanim, and you subdued before them the inhabitants of the land who were the Knanim, but Pitnei Biodam, and you gave them into their hands. Interesting how the Malbim here points out that there were those who were subdued before the Jewish people,
and
there were those whom you gave into the hands of the Jewish people.
Because the Torah tells us that when they came into Eretz Yisrael,
you remember we were talking, I think it was last week, when he listed the nations. The Chivi was missing. Where was that pasuk? It's most probably right in front of me, and I can't. The Chivi was missing, and it's in the context of this pasuk that I finally figured out the answer. In chapter 9, No.
No, it's
8. 8. Chapter. Chapter 8, possibly. No?
No, it's chapter 9, verse 8.
Chapter 9, verse 8. That's, of course, it's the one from the davening. Chapter 9, Pasukesu Motsotet Levavo Nemo Lefenecho Becharoti Mo Habrit Latet Et Eretz Haknali Achiti Hamori Haprizi Vayevusi Vahagirgoshi Latet Lazaro. So I had asked, what about the Chivi? There are 7 nations. There are 7 nations, and the Chivi is not mentioned. Now, in the pasuk that we're learning now, it really says 2 things. It says, "Vatachna lefnehem," you subdued before them the inhabitants of the land. "Vatitnein biyadam," and you gave them into their hands. The Malbim learns these as 2. What are the 2? The ones that were subdued, subjugated before Israel, were the Girgashi, who never put up a fight and left. They just threw their hands up and they left. The other 5, Titnein Biyadam, you gave them into the hands of the Jewish people. What about the Chivi? The one that isn't mentioned. The Chivi were the inhabitants of Gibeon. They were the ones who tricked the Jewish people into a treaty. So that means there are really 3 groups. There are those who threw up their hands and left. There are those who were given into the hands of the Jewish people. And there was one who tricked the Jewish people into a treaty and remained in the land, who could not fall into any one of the 2 categories that are mentioned in the pasuk here. So now we understand how careful they were when they listed only 6 nations, and they left out the Chivi, because they already knew. I mean, this was written after they had already entered into Eretz Yisrael. So they are reporting on it. So they could not say that 7 nations were given over into the hands of the Jewish people, because it wasn't so.
And because of the trickery, they were called
Givonim
and not
Chivim. They were called Netinim, became their names. And not only that, they are part of the group that returns from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. Because it says back there in Yehoshua that Givonim came to Yehoshua looking as though they had come a long distance from a faraway country. And they say, "We heard all the great things that the Lord has done with you, and we want to join in a treaty with this people." And they did, even though there was all sorts of hesitation. There were those who were for the treaty, those who were against the treaty. Ultimately, they did make a treaty with them, and a few days later, they find out that these are people who really live in a mighty city called Givon, which was not terribly far away, and they had really fooled the Jewish people. But because they had entered into a covenant in the name of God, so they decided they were going to keep the treaty. They were going to keep the treaty, even though most probably from a purely halachic point of view, or from the point of view of law, they didn't have to keep that contract, but they did, and they appointed them forever to be second class citizens, and they were going to do the menial service in the Beit HaMikdash. By its name, Yehoshua, by Yom Ahu, Chot Ve'etzim V'Shoach Emayim, is the pasuk back in Yehoshua. On that day, Yehoshua made them, by its name, he gave them into a position that they should be the water fetchers and the wood choppers, and that's what they were throughout all of time. And they have been mentioned a number of times here in Ezra and Nehemiah as being part of the group that had returned from Babel. Pasuk 25. Vayilkedu Odin Bitsurot, and they captured the fortified cities, Vadomo Shmeina, an earth that was fruitful, that was fat. Vayirishu Batim Malayim Koltuv, and they inherited houses that were full of all good. Borot Chatsuvim, wells that had been dug. Wells are terribly, terribly important in the Middle East. They had wells that had been dug. The Kromim Vezetim Ve'etzmakol Erov, and there were vineyards, and there were olives, and there were many fruit trees. Vayochlu, Vayizbu, Vayashminu, they ate and they were sated and they became fat. Vayitadnu, this Vayitadnu, Betuvcha Hagadol, and they became.
Here it says luxuriated.
Luxuriated. Okay, luxuriated is a fine term. All right. On which word? On Vayitadnu, they say luxuriated. Yeah. Oh, not on Vayashminu.
No. You said that already.
Vayitadnu, luxuriated, betuvcha hagadol, in your great goodness. Vayamru, vayimritu. Bach, vayamru, vayimritu. Now, they must probably have to give you two translations. Vayimritu is rebelled. And how do they translate vayamru?
Disobedient.
Because Yimritu has to be more intense than Vayamru. Vayamru is to be, yes, disobedient. Mamrim heyitem im Hashem alekechem. Vayamru, Dovra Melo says in Tehillim, Vayamru al Yam biyamsuf. Even at the Yamsuf, there were Jews who were disobedient. But the disobedience leadeth unto Vayimritu, that they rebelled. Vayashlichu et Toratcha acharei gavam, and they threw your Torah behind their backs, like cast it away. Now those of you who were at the shir yesterday can know that the Rambam used this phrase where the Rambam says that a man has a responsibility not to take his intellect, his common sense, and throw it behind his back, because man has eyes in front of him, not eyes in back of him. The Rambam there is making the statement that you can't just machavek real what's real common sense and accept as truth something that just doesn't make any sense. The Rambam took that phrase from here. Vayashlichu, they cast Torat ha'acharei gavon behind their backs, that nevi'echo harogu, they killed your prophets, asher he'idu bom la'hashiva melecho, who had warned them. The word aid means witness, but the responsibility of a witness always was to warn the potential perpetrator of a sin that he shouldn't do it, because if he's going to do it, then he is going to be punished. So a witness is not only one who passively watches a crime take place, but the witness, al pi halach, is also the one who has to be there and say, no, 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 warn him not to do it. So therefore, he'idu means not only to witness, but to warn. They killed your prophets, hasher he'idu bam lahashivam elecha, who warned them in order, and why did they warn them? The purpose was lahashivam elecha, to bring them back to you. Vayasu na'atzot gedolot, and they did things that were terrible in their rejection of God. What he's going to give us now is a description of the days of the Shoftim, the period of the Shoftim. You gave them into the hands of their oppressors, and they oppressed them, and at the time of their oppression. So what did they do when they were oppressed? They cried out to you, and you heard them from the heavens, and because of your great mercy, you gave them saviors, and they saved them from the hands of their oppressors. Mamish, the words are all phrases taken directly from Sefer Shoftim. And when things became easier, when the crisis passed, Yoshuvu la'asot ra'alu fadahu, they turned again and they did that which was evil before you. Vataz vein bi'ado yevein, so you forsook them, you left them in the hands of their enemies. Vayirdu b'hem, and they ruled over them. Vayoshuvu, and they turned around again. Vayizokuha, and they cried out to you. I have a feeling it's not only they cried out to you, but they, an azaka is, you know, no, it's sort of, sort of the alarm went out. God, the mention, you know, we need you now. You know, we need you. It's sort of, you know, the Hatzola Machshir Kesher. What do you call him? You know, his radio. It sounded. Klal Yisrael needs me. His telephone coming from down below. They alarmed you. and you listen to them from the heavens, v'tachilem, and you save them, k'rachamecha, as is your mercy, rabos itin, many times you did it. This was something that repeated itself over and over again. They sinned, you forsook them, they suffered, they cried out because of your great mercy. You listen. Vata'ag b'hem, and you warn them. La'ashiron al Torah, to bring them back to your Torah. The Hema Hezidu, again, I think it's for the third time we use this word, and we explained the word in detail last week. Hema Hezidu, they acted with intention to sin. V'lo shamu l'mitzvotecha, and they didn't listen to your commandments. U'b'mishpatecha chotubam, and your laws, they sinned them. And what kind of laws are they? Here is another phrase, a phrase that, by the way, appears not only in Torah, I think it was in one of last week's sedras, it was in Kedoshim, but it's also a phrase that is used by the Navi Hagolah, Yechezkel. Yechezkel, in a few chapters there, keeps using it as a constant refrain. What were they telling them to do? They were telling them to keep the mitzvahs asher yaseh adam v'chayo behem, that man will do them and live through them. And what they did was, vayitnu kateif soredet, a shoulder that is rebellious. No, after that. Before that, what does it say immediately? A stubborn shoulder. Kateif soredet is the stubborn shoulder. V'arpam hikshu, and they stiffened their necks. V'lo shomei, when they didn't listen. But timshach aleihem shanim. And this continued. In other words, "Vatim shachaleim" means more. It means Rashi says, "Vatim shachaleim," you drew out your mercy upon them for many years. "Moshachta aleim rachamim shelo lahashkitam." You drew out, you stretched out your mercy for many years. "Vata adbam," and you warned them, "Beruchacha," with your spirit, "Biyat neviyecha," through your prophets, v'lohezin, when they didn't listen, but name, and you gave them over, biyad amei haratzot, in the hands of the nations, the people of the countries around. U'berachamecha haradim, but because of your great mercy, lo asitam kola, you didn't destroy them, v'lo azavtam, and you didn't forsake them, ki keil chanun v'rachamata, because you're a kind and a merciful God. V'yata elokeinu, now our God, hakeil, Hagadol, Hagibor, Ha'anora. This is, we have talked about this Maimon Chazal a number of times, and anybody who listened to Radio West on the night of Yom HaShoah would have heard me say it then. I said it to you a number of times. This brings us back to the famous Gemara, the Gemara in Masechta Yuma, where the Gemara asks, Lomo nish nikru shimon anshei knesset hagadola, why were they called the men of the great assembly? And the Gemara says they were called the men of the great assembly, shehecheziru atora liyoshna, because they returned the crown to its original glory. Moshe Rabbeinu in Torah refers to God and describes him as hakel, hagadol, hagibor, v'hanora, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God. V'osa Daniel, along comes Daniel, and he refers to him as Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, and does not refer to him as Nora, awesome. This is in a tefillah that Yirmiyahu says in chapter 32 of Yirmiyahu. So he, because when he sees the enemies of Israel on the Temple Mount, he does not see the fear of God. Also Daniel, along came Daniel, and Daniel did not call God Gibor, mighty. He called him Hakel Hagadol, but he didn't call him Gibor. Why didn't he call him Gibor? Because he saw the nations of the world enslaving the Jewish people. Where is God's might? So then along came the Anshei Knesset Hagadol, and this is it. This is the period of the men of the great assembly. And here, for the first time in 100 years, We hear God described as Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Bahanora, and that's what the men of the great assembly put into the Shemoneh Esrei 3 times a day. Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Bahanora. And the Gemara there goes on to say that's why they were called men of the great assembly, because they returned the crown, the description of God in all of his greatness, the complete description as was given by Moshe Rabbeinu. And of course, I have always said the most fascinating part of the Gemara is the Gemara that asks, and Yirmiyahu and Daniel, who gave them the right to diminish the description of God? Yirmiyahu, what are you talking about? What do you mean you can't say Nora? Why, Daniel, why don't you call God Gibor, mighty? So the Gemara's great answer is, because the Gemara says, Mikivan shehayu yodin b'hakadosh baruch hu, because they knew that God is amiti, God is truthful, therefore lo chizbu bo, they did not lie to him. What was Yirmiyahu supposed to do when he sees Churban? He sees destruction. He sees Auschwitz. Is he supposed to say that here is God's an expression of God's fearsomeness in the world? The suffering of the Jewish people is chil of Hashem. It's a desecration of God's name. If Jews are in are subdued by the nations of the world, God's gevura, his might, is simply not evident. It is chil of Hashem. Yeheskel calls it time and time again. He says, in the name of God, I'm going to bring you back to Eretz Yisrael because of Shmi, my name, Hanuchulal Bagoyim, that is desecrated by the nations of the world. So what I always say, and I said it a number of times, is that were the men of the great assembly, were they able to see more than Yirmiyahu, and were they able to see more than Daniel? They say, no, it's not because they were greater than Yirmiyahu or greater than Daniel. They lived in a different time frame. Yirmiyahu lived in the time of Churban. Daniel lived at the time of exile. Anshe Knesset HaGdolah lived at Shivat Zion. They saw the return to Zion. They saw Binyan Beth HaMikdash. They saw the Binyan Yerushalayim. They're simply living in a different time frame. As I quote so often in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that the establishment of the state of Israel saved faith by the Jewish people. The Jewish people were in a process, after Auschwitz, they were in a process of mass defection, because the big question loomed, how did God permit this to happen? And therefore 3 years later, I mean, what a brief period in time, in 3 years, to go from Churban to Tikkumah. In other words, what we saw in our lifetime is the sum total of what Yirmiyahu, Daniel, and Anshe Knesset HaGadolah saw in all of this. We saw the period where there was no fear of God. We saw the period where there was no gevura, no strength of God. And we also were zeicher to see the period of Hakel, HaGadol, HaGibor, VeHanora, which most probably, at one and the same time, it becomes a more confusing for people to have to go through all of these awesome emotions in a brief period of time. But of course, it means therefore that we were zeichet to things that others weren't zeichet to. Yes? Excuse me. Can I just bring this to a close? The people who are opposed to Yom HaAtzmaut, or opposed to saying Hallel, will stand on their heads and find every excuse, because they begin with the premise that the whole establishment of the state was a sin, and the people who did it were a bunch of Rishayim. So it's only a matter of finding another excuse. Another excuse. And therefore, even if it makes no sense whatsoever, they will turn upside down and do somersaults just to show that you can't do it. I will tell them that there are 86 major Jewish communities that established Yom Tovim because of miracles that happened in their communities. There were Purims that were established by at least 86 communities that we have on record, where they made it a Yom Tov for them and their children and their children's children, with Suda and with Hallel, and one of them, of course, was Frankfurt am Main. And what was the great yontif that they made in Frankfurt am Main? The great yontif was because there were reports of a pogrom, an impending pogrom, and it never happened. And for that they made a yontif for their children and their children's children at South Kol HaDawal, with Hallel and Suda. So anybody, if they start off with the fact that it was Ben Gurion who made it, and they skirt the outer limits of Kfir into the Beit Shalom with their great frumkeit. What are you talking about? There's a tremendous difference between Ezra and Nehemiah and us. Ezra and Nehemiah never had an independent state. And if you read Ezra and Nehemiah, how many times does he say that we are under the heel of the nations of the world? We got more than Rabbi Yishalim gave us. He gave us infinitely more than he gave Ezra and Nehemiah. So all of these people are just beginning with the premise, the same mistake that they've made for 100 years, the same mistake that we were never part of the building of this country. Would we have come in our masses in the 30s and the 40s, Jews would have been saved and it would have been a full of Medina, but we didn't come, Shaymini. We didn't come. And who did come? The guys who built it, the Pacheva guys came. They're the ones who came. They're the guys. I'm not going into that. So you should know, this is the cloud. The cloud is, you start off on the assumption that the whole thing is an avaira, because you can't rebel against the nation of the world. The whole state was born in absolute sin. I have 10 volumes of the Satna Rebbe's Perush on Chumash. His knowledge of Chumash and Mefarshim is most probably, I would say, Nora. Awesome. Awesome. On any given parsha, he will deal with a near global Torah sweep. And you know what happens in every parsha? There's one terrible aveira. Whoever does an aveira in Torah does one terrible aveira. You know what his terrible aveira is? He's trying to bring the geula too early. Everybody, I'm telling you, from Adam Arishan till Nadav Aviu, everybody, it's the same sin. And this, of course, is the shita that became the shita in the world out there. Therefore, the day is Churban. The people who did it are Rishoyim. The flag is a shmata. And at the same time, they cannot see that this is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. We have so much more to be thankful for than Ezra and Nehemiah ever had. Ezra and Nehemiah are now trying to resolve the problems of intermarriage, and they were going to come to Chil Shabbos, we're going to have problems with Shemitah and Yobel in the next chapter. You're going to see it's unbelievable, the problems. And that's 100 years after the return from Babel. 100 years after the return from Babel, at a time when there's a Beis HaMikdash, at a time when the Anavim suffered more problems than we have today. And we're still not independent. And we're not going to be independent for another 100 years after that. And we went from Auschwitz to an independent state with one of the strongest armies in the world, which of course is also a terrible thing. You can't say that. If you talk about the army and the air force, then you're over the second aveira. The first aveira, the second aveira is the aveira of Kaychi v'oitzim Yudi, Osilis HaChayel HaZeh. My strength and my might did this for me. What's wrong with having a strong army and saying, Baruch Hashem, we have a strong army. Well, we better off when we didn't have one. So they've created a whole system that is so unhealthy. Because what they really have to do is take the most natural emotions of all people, that all people have. Sorry, I'm going to admit it right here. I'm ready to admit it. I get a little choked up when I hear people sing the Hatikva. I get a little choked up when I see the flag flying. What are you talking about? Thousands of kids walking with flags from Birkenau to Auschwitz, understand? I tell you, I melt away, I'm jellyfish. And these people have to fight every one of these emotions. The flag is garnished, that tikviz is vicious, some drunk wrote it, the country is so they've created a whole sick theology. Sick. Of course, this tape can only remain within the confines of a sick hashkafa. and they make their children sick and their grandchildren sick, and they are unable to see the Chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So all of the excuses, and I've gone through them all. Why Heia? That was the beginning of the war. Shiva Bach asked me that last week. They should have made the party at the end of the war. That's how smarty pants that you are. The war never ended, you understand. But something happened on Heia that Klal Yisrael will benefit from for all generations, because Eretz Yisrael became our property and we became the masters, and we can decide who comes into Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael is open to every Jew, and every Jew in the world will never have to look for a home because he has one. That's not one of the greatest events in all of history, not enough to call out the biggest Shalom, Hayu Lashem Kitayv Kalelim Chazay. So you should know. Thanks for asking the question. I need it. No, you didn't aggravate me. You gave me chias. So you should know. Anybody pulls one of these things on you, you have your telephone with you, put it on, call me, and I'll tell you exactly what to yell back at the guy. You understand? It's all phony. Okay. There's a second part. Go ahead. Aggravate me now. Go ahead.
Okay. The second part was that everybody goes to sit in the building where they meet stock and halakhas, because they gave the halakhas and what constitutes the chag. So what is the big specification? What is the something to be a chag? And people go to sit in the Golei Hador. They are known as the Golei Hador in terms of stock halakha. And people go to them for all kinds of questions. Shabbos, kashrus, this, that, whatever it is. But when it comes to whether or not the Yom HaTzmaut should be considered a chag, that they don't go to, and they say we have a different hashkafa. In other words, so they turn their backs on these.
Who's they? Who's they? Anybody who goes to Rav Yashiv or somebody else for Pesach Halacha will most probably do the same thing that he does with regard to Yom HaTzmaut. What are you talking about? And by the way, I'm not so certain that I don't have a right to be selective. I'll ask a shaila, because this is a question to me, but something that's not a shaila to me, I don't ask. What's so unfair or unjust about this? Whoever created this hashkafa, that if I ask Gadol X a shaila, I have to do everything that Gadol X believes is.
Or I have to ask him everything.
Who says? This is a new hashkafa that Klal Yisrael never knew of. What are you talking about? Do you know what you have to tell these people? Do you know what's the classic response? The classic response is exactly the pasuk before. They took their intellect, as the Rambam said, and they threw it behind them. Couldn't look and see the Chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all of its glory. I'm not bound to anybody. I don't have to ask everybody any shittas. I don't get shook up if Rabbi X says that Rabbi Soloveitchik was opposed to the saying of Halal. No. But I'm speaking to her about another rabbi, not our Rabbi Adler's teaching for the Jerusalem College for adults. I mean, obviously we get the correct hashgacha over here. But there was another rabbi who said that Rabbi Soloveitchik.
Right, I heard it myself.
Okay. So Rabbi Adler said otherwise, right? That there can be a question of whether to say a bracha or not to say a bracha. That's a legitimate question, halacha. I mean, I have become so accommodating, I couldn't care less. You don't want to say halal altogether, don't say halal. Make a suda, do something, mark the day. But to walk around as though the day never happened, or worse, that the day was one of the great tragedies that befell the Jewish people. There was a great rabbi in New York who said the two great tragedies of our generation are the Shoah and the establishment of the State of Israel. So I have to listen to him. I have to listen to him. Okay, now I'll give you. I'm the one that should be coughing. Yes, go ahead. No.
Said, "Cops, and they have to tell them." And the Yom HaShoah, and the fellow said, we don't say Chatzimayach because we don't say the prayer of the Korbanot.
Because we don't say what?
Tefillah of the Korbanot.
Okay. What's so, that mean? I don't know what that means.
I thought you might know. I
don't have a clue what that means.
See, people who tell me in the name of Nisanay, isn't it?
No,
we get, you know, we're a very cantankerous people. You know, we're always at each other's necks.
You were looking for.
She started it, Bella! She started it!
I had to bring it up because of Ezra Nehemiah.
Because Ezra, I mean, it was legitimate, the fact. I understand that it was absolutely legitimate. So I've given you enough reasons in addition to the fact that it did say, and we pointed out last week that they said Hallel. They said Hallel, and I also made another point. It was in chapter 8 they said Hallel, and I made another point that the Rambam says in the Mor HaNebuchim, this is brought by the Chav. But I don't have to bring it from the Chav, I can just see it in the Mor HaNebuchim. That the Chag, Knisa La'aretz, was Sukkos. They made Sukkos the Chag of entering Eretz Yisrael. And you know what I'm ready to say? I'm going to go one step further. Pesach was the Chag of Yehoshua's entry into Eretz Yisrael. When did they cross into Eretz Yisrael? They crossed the Yarden on the 10th day of Nisan. And they did Brit Milah, and they made Korban Pesach in Gilgal on the 14th day, 4 days after they crossed. And the conquest of Eretz Yisrael began on Pesach. Pesach was the yontif of the entry into Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yehoshua. Sukkis was the yontif of the entry into Eretz Yisrael in the days of Nehemiah. And that means, corresponding to these two Yomim Tovim, it's also Chanukah and Purim. We'll talk about that yet. But there's going to be, there is a third yontif midrabanan. There will be, and we already have it. I mean, just a love for anybody here. I love this. For the third Knesal Eretz Yisrael in our days, it's the month of Iyar. The entry in the days of Yeshua, the Yontif of Independence Day, was Pesach. In the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, it was Sukkos. And in our days, it's the month of Iyar. How do you like that? Do me something. Okay? Yes?
When we Rabbi Weinberg talked about it.
Yeah.
That all the great rabbis, all the Haredi rabbis, went to mass rallies and they were crying on the way there. They all had came to the initiation of the state. So what happened? All of the biggest rabbis.
What do you mean
all
they?
They were all. He said the emotions were so high.
What are you talking about?
In Chicago, they had a rally of 10,000 people, and he remembered going with his father, and everyone was crying. They said the tears were flowing.
What are you talking about? Of course! I'll tell you!
So what happened?
Four! Everybody was four! Everybody was four!
But joy! They all went to these rallies!
Listen, if you want, I can make a Xerox copy for you of a proclamation that was signed by nearly all of the Rebbes and all of Gedola Yerushalayim a few months after the establishment of the state, where they referred to the state as Reishis Tzmichas Gulasenu. The Belzer Rebbe signed on it, the Geder Rebbe is signed on it, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, the Rebbe of Yerushalayim, is signed on it. I'll bring you a copy!
Okay, I myself know rabbis,
and Ezra's told me. All right, well, I think some 80 rabbis were signed on it.
What happened?
What do you mean, what happened? So I tell you what happened. I mean, now, this tape is really going to have to be, this is, you know, this is a hot tape. What really happened was the following. I always say, it was the most powerful personality of the 50s and 60s who left his imprint on the religious world, because nobody had the guts to stand up to him. And that was the Satmar Rebbe. The Satmar Rebbe was a powerful, powerful personality, and his shita became the shita of the yeshivas, because in the yeshivas, everybody was scared stiff of their shadows. They didn't want to seem as though they're not as frum as the next guy. So therefore, the one who spoke out most loudly, and the one who spoke out with the greatest force, and with and you know, they were having difficulty, you know, talking during the 50s, let's not kid ourselves. You know, I love it every time I've been hearing the last few days, you know, that we have to have establish a committee against kfiya datit. Yeah. You understand, the religious coercion. I was here in the 50s, and I remember the non-religious coercion.
Oh, boy.
Oy, what they did, a crime that cries out to the very heavens. on poor immigrants didn't have a bissen breit, and the only way you got a stickle breit is if a job is if you signed up with the Histadrut and Mapai, and they tore Yiddishkeit away from them. So, you know, it was a pretty rough period of time during the 50s to be able to say, rah, 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 State of Israel, when these Rishoyim, you understand, were causing such terrible destruction over here. You had to have a little faith and a little, you know, little confidence that the Rebbein Shalom someday is gonna pay them back. And boy, he's paying them back. They're running around. The best description I can use is a Yiddish fasantemoyz. Do you know what a fasantemoyz is? A fasantemoyz is a poisoned mouse. A poisoned mouse is running on. They're going crazy. They're not going to let us do this, and they're not going to let us do that. They're religious, the charedim, because Batsheva couldn't get undressed over there, so they're all scared all over. Ronnie Milo is starting his new anti-dati party, the big jerk. He will most probably in a week from now, he will have disappeared from the entire scene. What are you talking about? It was difficult in the 50s. I remember going to mass rallies. I mean, there was the issue of Gius Bonos, of conscription of girls to the army. There was the issue of Nituche Mason, autopsies. It was a terrible... And you know why it was a terrible period of time? Remember what I said then? Because we Tzimeginos didn't come. And they did come. And they were here. And they were the Balabatim. If we would have come, we would have been the Balabatim. Or at least we would have been strong enough to take care of our own. But we weren't here to take care of that. And because we weren't here, so hundreds of thousands of North African Jews, Tucker, went down the drain. And I understand, Shas, when they move through this country now and they're trying to right their wrong. The only thing is they're doing a lot of wrongs on the way to righting the wrong. But it was a terrible period of time. I mean, should I give you some personal confessions? I had nearly reached the point where, God, I was finished with this Ben Gurion and a whole bunch of them. They nearly had me. And Mamish, God save me. God save me.
Otherwise, you'd be sitting in Ayesha.
Absolutely. And I'd be telling you why not to say Halan Yom Ha'atzmaut. But I wasn't in Mabarot. I was one of the first Yeshiva Rabbis to come into the Mabarot. It was terrible what was going on there. I was the first one to Dimona. Shabbos HaGadol 1956, I spent in Dimona. You know what Dimona was? Dimona, mamish. Literally sand dunes, and they plunked down little one-room houses on the dunes. You have no idea what it was like. The moment the wind would come, you know what you're doing a whole day? A whole day they were sweeping the sand. Sweeping the sand out of the house, sweeping the sand. Nothing was paved. Nothing. It was all sand. And at night, thank God these Moroccan Jews brought up. They have a certain kind of a heavy quilt. You get under that quilt. Oh, God, was that a quilt? And I stood there. I saw where they had begun with their own hands to build a mikveh, and these Mapai Rishoyim stopped them. Now, do you know what it means when you stop people from building a mikveh? What are they going to do? Destructive of their whole lives. So I remember we called a mass meeting of all the 300 families Sunday in the morning, and I got... In fact, I was standing... I took the whole crowd out of the shul. What do you mean? The shul was a little tzchif that was burning in the heat. And we marched over to the spot where they had begun digging the mikveh. And a few of these Mapai Histadrut, Tzioni goons, started coming at me to hit me mamish. Everybody started screaming. And I pulled out my American passport. Saved me at the last minute. My American passport, you understand? Eisenhower was my president. I saw those Rishoyim. I saw what they did. But what does that have to do with with God's gift? Yavor Anes Mikol Makom. And it's not Yavor Anes Mikol Makom. It's not really that. The Rebbeim had no other choice. There was nobody else on the spot to do it. He didn't have us Chimigidalech over here to bring the miracle through us. He only had Ben Gurion. Okay, if he's the only act in town, then he's going to do it. Where were we?
We're blaming them.
They're ashamed. They were ashamed. There's no question about it. I saw absolute vicious. I saw coercion of a terrible sort. And the evidence is out there. The evidence is out there. Every taxi driver, every Yarkon that you see, that Pshashtikal, you know, a little Masorati, or the guys that come to the bar mitzvahs, you understand, with their white sneakers and their, the whole generation of Sfardim that are not formed. That's all them. That's all the work. That's all the work of these secular Zionists. But we have nobody to blame but ourselves. We have nobody to blame but ourselves. Huh? Yes. Us. We weren't there. We weren't here. We weren't here. We didn't come. We weren't here. So they came and they built it. So now it's taking us 50 years to regain the country from their hands. And boy, are we doing it. You have no idea. You have no idea the difference between the middle 50s and now. These people are running around so scared. Yossi Sabir Taka has convinced himself that someday they're going to schlep him into Har Samaach, put a kippah on his head. I mean, I know they won't be able to pin it on. They'll have to use, Velcro to keep his kippah on his bald head. And Shalamat Aloni Pashet, they'll be schlepping or screaming to the mikveh. I don't know, but that's the way they see. They've convinced themselves of this. Wait a minute. No, they resurrected her. There was a Trias HaMeisim. The Trias HaMeisim for her was in the middle of the showing of the Jubilee bells, Jubilee bells, my Jubilee bells, you know. In the middle of that, they push a Trias HaMeisim. I want to watch the Jubilee bells. And you should know, I don't think we should pay our Agdat Televisia. I want to watch the Jubilee bells. I don't want to hear you interrupting it every few minutes. Batsheva's coming, Batsheva's going, Batsheva's leaving. Get compromised, nish compromised. And then they bring in Shalamat Aloni. I'm trying to watch Al Gore. I'm trying to watch my prime minister. I like when my prime minister says, Avinu Shabbos Shabbayim Tzur Yisrael V'kavalo Pachechet Medinat Yisrael Reishit Zmichat V'lateinu. I like it. That's right. I get all choked up, yes. And when he puts on a talus and he says, Shema Yisrael by Auschwitz, yes, I like that. That's right. I like it. But it's a difference day and night. How many times have I described the dearth and the paucity of the yeshiva world, I mean, the yeshiva village in the 50s? There's nothing here. There was nothing here. Count the yeshivas on one hand. Why weren't the yeshivas here? Because we weren't here. We weren't here. So what do we want? We want not only Ben Gurion should build us a state. Not only Ben Gurion and his boys should die for the state. They should build for us a chinuch state. You understand? Dusnach, we have the chutzpah to demand. You build us a chinuch state. Build a chinuch state? Come make a chinuch state! And then, not too late, but a little bit late for a few 100,000 Jews or more, yes, religious Jews began to heed the call. But they don't understand what's taking place over here. They don't have a clue. I mean, what Rabbi Wein says, I remember it. I mean, he may remember it just a little bit more because I think he's about a year or two older. But don't make, I was very precocious and I was... what he knew at 14, I knew at 12. But there's no question about it. Of course in the religious world they were opposed. There were those who were opposed to the establishment of the state. But once it was established, talking about it was accepted by all, except one. In Tarvadas they said, hello. Tarvadas. You'll tell them today that they said hello, you understand? The walls will come falling down. Mr. Mendelowitz had them say hello. And then everybody got scared. All right, you planned all of this. Va'ata Elokeinu.
Where are we?
Pasek Lamed Beis. I think that it's very, you would like, this is Mamish, a pasek of Lev. Va'ata Elokeinu Hakel Hagadol Hagibor V'Hanora. Chapter 9, pasek 32. This is the great pasek. This is why they were called the men of the great assembly. Because they were able, in the fullness of their experience, they were now able to say, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, V'Hanora. And what were they saying, about a community that suffered so many problems? You're going to see in the next chapter the takanos, the enactments of Ezra and Nehemiah. They're going to have to rebuild Jewish life, you understand, in so many areas. But it didn't take away anything from their ability to say Hallel for what the Rabbein Yishalelem had done for them. Einar, this is a tomb in Satan. You know what really, you want to know what gets me real angry?
Are you good?
You're angry? No, now I'm going to tell you what gets me angry. That world, your non-Howl sayers, want that somebody else should create for them a fully complete, perfect thing. And then when it's perfect, maybe they'll say, Aleph. What are you talking about? Where's their perfection? Perfection will not come until after Yemot HaMashiach. They're always going to be the negative. Oh, you, didn't I say it last week? I said it last week, 2 weeks ago. Those who always find fault, they don't find anything good here. It's a mitzvah to find fault and to judge on the basis of the faults that you find. You want to find fault? I tell you, just open up the newspaper every day and you'll find fault.
Seems in Ezra and Nehemiah, the Prumah didn't come either.
Oh, what an interesting
It's not only Ezra and Nehemiah, the one who says it so clearly. Rabbi Yehuda Levi says it very clearly in the Kuzri. Rabbi Yehuda Levi goes on and he talks at great length to the king of the Khazars about the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, and that Eretz Yisrael is the greatest place in the world, and there is sanctity, there is the divine presence. So the king of the Khazars says to me, Khabibi, what are you doing here? So now Rabbi Yehuda Levi had a number of possibilities. He could have said, listen, there are wars there. It's dangerous to travel there. There's no panas over there. There are no yeshivas. And by the way, everything he would have said would have been true. But well, you know what he chooses to say? The most beautiful answer of all, I will never forget it. Ho vashtani melech kuzar. You have shamed me, king of the Khazars. You're right. It was the mistake we made then that we didn't come on Aliyah, and we're still making the same mistake. That's an honest joke. We made a mistake. We didn't come in the 20s, we didn't come in the 30s. It was Rav Yitzchak Breuer, one of the great leaders of Agudas Yisrael, who in 1920 begged of them, let's go, let's take our people on Aliyah. So at the Knesset Gedolah, they get, I don't know whether it was 1920 or 21, most probably it was in Marienbad. One of the days I have to find out where Marienbad is. It was in Marienbad, huh?
Marienbad.
Listen, that's bad. I never heard it called Marienbad in my life. Marienbad. She's going to even tell me Warsaw right away. Vazhe, Kulka, come on. All right. So he writes in his memoirs how he pleaded with them, let's make yishuvim, let's open kibbutzim. This is the early 20s. And he lived long enough till after the establishment of the state where he was able to write, unfortunately, what a terrible mistake. So he writes there that in 1920 or 21, they made, two motions were passed. One was to open up a bank in Eretz Yisrael, and the second was to establish a yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. And the yeshuv was going to be called Shoshanas Yaakov. Why was it going to be called Shoshanas Yaakov? Because the world leader of Agudas Yisrael was Moreinu Rabbi Yaakov Rausenheim. So they were going to name it after him. So he says, of the two resolutions taken in 1920 or 1921, one at least got a name. The bank never even got a name, you understand. Neither one of the two did anybody ever lift a finger to do. And if they would have, and he's saying it out of pain, following the Shoah, would have saved, who knows how many Jews would have been saved. So we turn around, and we made a mistake, so the only thing to do is do what Rabbi Yehuda Levi did. Ho vashtani melech kuzar, you've embarrassed me of shame.
You're right, and I'm wrong. Get it over with, and say we were wrong, and become part of the process.
The truth is, that's exactly what they've all done. Do you know who are the poor schnooks over here? The poor man in the street who still believes all of the anti-Medina talk. The leadership has long passed that. The leadership is heavily involved in the Knesset, in politics, in business, in government. But it hasn't filtered down to the little guy who's still walking around with his flunkite opposed to the flag or opposed to Yom HaTzmut, when the fact is that the Dati and the Haredi communities are nearly full-fledged members of the society. There's, of course, one problem that there's no question about it, that nothing will truly ever be resolved until that problem is resolved. The question of the army is a painful, painful, serious problem. Remember, we had somebody at the house who said that he spent 2 hours with a Chiloni and he convinced him that, yes, Yeshiva Rachman should not go to the army. And I looked at him and I said, sugar, I mean, of course, you're crazy, you think I'm crazy. You can spend 100 hours with a Chiloni and you will never convince him that your position is correct.
Or with a Hezbollah.
And the sooner the yeshivas will finally understand that we better do something about it. Everybody will accept the idea that, yes, there are some people that Torosam Umnosam. I mean, even that, by the way, Torosam Umnosam, that Torah is their prime occupation, was something that Chazal used about the giants of Torah. And everybody over here walking around, you know, twirling his chitches, Terosim Nosa. I mean, this is nonsense. You can't go ahead and tell us that kind of story. And ultimately, there will never be a rapprochement between the two sectors of the community. This is the most serious problem of all. There are so many possibilities, but nobody wants to listen, and they're making a terrible, terrible mistake. But show wouldn't be a problem. All the problems would simply disappear overnight.
I heard they really don't want the religious in the army because then it'll really change the philo
men,
and they don't want that.
That's Haredi talk. It's not true. They'll take them gladly into the army. Let them do their 3-month, 4-month basic training. Let them do their miluim. What's so terrible? I don't understand. I for the life of me don't understand. And when Ne'eman suggested 1 month training, they came down on him as though he had committed the worst of the war. Now, you did get me into something that I didn't want to get into at all. I already had a major shear prepared on Perik Yud over here. Arta Elokeinu, just on at least 2 Pasuk Lamed Beis. Arta Elokeinu, it's your fault. Arta. Well, you know, I'm also a shtickle worked up because this morning I was up at about 5:30 and I finished the article. I was writing an article and I faxed the article to my secretary, and I hope to have it finished, and I was pretty angry this morning. So you just... I wrote an article for the Young Israel Viewpoint. They wanted me to write about Aliyah. They're putting out a 50-year jubilee issue. So I wrote something about it. So, of course, I don't listen to my wife. My wife said... It's too powerful. Come on, you gotta say, you know, gotta be goal, you know, get tough. Anyway, they call me after they receive the article. They call me, Rabbi Pesach Lerner calls and says, Shalom, I want you to be goal. Why don't you send this on so powerful? And she doesn't know what's going on, but she figured out what's going on. So said to him, you listen, and when I tell you, to go to Shubina. Okay. Says, come on, I want to go fire, you know. So I wrote another 5 pages, you understand, which is fire. They're going to burn flags on my lawn. You know, I don't know what they're going to do after American Jewry gets their hands on this. So I was in the mood already. It started at 5:30 this morning. I just go through 4 pages of a listing. If we would have another 100,000 American Orthodox Jews, what this society would look like. And I go through whatever area you want.
that is a painful one to us today, 100,000 American Jews, Orthodox Jews, would have made all the difference in the world, and it's still not too late. Another 100,000 Jews living in Yehudah Vishomron, we wouldn't be in any... We wouldn't need Bibi, God bless his soul, who stands up so strong over there. Boy, this guy is most probably, there are bulldozers going all over him, and he doesn't give an inch. He's gavaldic. What are you talking about? 100,000 American Jews in the arts, in communication, in the business world, with their kippot, with the... They make a whole difference. The doctors, the lawyers. You know, 100,000 American former Yidden will make a tremendous difference. What are you talking about? The cultural battle would be won like that. What would they represent? Another five members of Knesset? It would make it clear. I mean, Milo and Barak are not coming face to face with the truth. Without the Orthodox, you can't make any government, no prime minister in there. The only guys that can't be trusted, of course, are Shas. Understand? So I didn't write it in the article, 100,000 American Orthodox Ashkenazi Jews. But that's what I meant. That's what I meant. What are you talking about? They burned my cultural Satan mall. I mean, they burned it once, they'll burn it again. What are you?
That's right.
But we're talking about what a kayach that would be. And what happens if we would have had that kayach years ago?
The Rabbi Golan, yes,
there's
something. If that's true,
that's what
you've
been doing all day.
Moment.
What?
Look at the heads they're filming. How come that doesn't make a dent?
It makes a tremendous dent. What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
And that's why he says it, because it's making a big
dent. It is making a big dent. Why do you think they're going crazy? Do you know who they're out to lynch now? I'm just saying another 100,000. I'm not saying that these guys are going to build it. They're just going to add. They're not building anything. They're just going to come into it. And then, of course, I tell them, what excuse do you have to stay in America? First of all, in all of my studies of Torah, I haven't found any place where it says it's a mitzvah to live in America. But it does say that it's a mitzvah to live over here. And I told them, where in America can you find, within a one block radius, Nathan's Le Mahadrin, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Dunkin' Donuts, Dunkin's Bagels, and Sabara? I forgot about Sabara. How could it?
You know, the best way to the American heart is through their stomach, right?
Absolutely. So I'm not saying the Hezda boys have made the most dramatic change in this country. And I will say, they do recognize it. What? I started saying, Leah, do you know what's driving them crazy? Just keep watching every time you see the name Amidror. Watch the name Amidror. He's the highest ranking officer with a kippah sruga in the army, and they're even talking about him eventually as being the first kippah sruga ramatkal. They are trying to destroy this guy because they're frightened out of their wits that Amidror and Effie Fine and a whole bunch of them are going to take over the army. The most dramatic change in this country came as a result of the Hezda yeshivas. And I'm going to tell you one story. I'm sorry, you know, wait. The summer of 1955, I went touring the country. The last time I went by bus. And wouldn't step in a bus. And stuff. Yeah. All right. And I came to Kibbutz Yavna. And on Kibbutz Yavna, I see a man walking around with a Becker shirt. He didn't look like a kibbutznik to me. So I went over, I said, Shalom Aleichem. And we sat down under a tree. It was a very hot day. I don't think he took off his coat. And he showed me a little hill on which there was a wooden tzvich, and he says, I'm going to build a yeshiva there. We're calling it Keren Biavna. It was Rav Goldwicht, understand? And the two of us are sitting under a tree, and he tells me about his great dreams. I looked at him like, Michelle, you fit into the landscape here like a Greek in the tabernacles, you understand? I just didn't sick it, that's what he looked like. But it was a nice answer. I thought, listen, you know, never tell. So it's the time to tell you what Keren Biavna became. Keren Biavna was the beginning of a revolution in this country. The Hezda yeshivas, and you know, there's another fascinating revolution taking place right now in the Hezda yeshivas.
up until recently, the Rebbeim and the Ramim in the Hezi Yeshivas were sending their own children to Haredi Yeshivas. Stopped. No more. No more. Because there are enough of their own yeshivas and enough of their own homegrown Talmidei Chachamim. I remember when we were here on sabbatical, that was 18 years ago. So I kept getting this stuff. Hezdi Yeshivas. Can any godel in Ishtikun from the Hezdi Yeshivas? There isn't a single godel from the Hezdi Yeshivas. Don't that mean amount to anything? So I said, I don't understand. It most probably took you guys 100 years of Yeshivas until you produced Ebbes of Hugh Gedalah. They're only 10 years old. What do you want? Let's see in another 20 years. Go ask them now whether they are Talmidei Chachamim in the Hezdi Yeshivas.
Son, what said all the teachers are rebellion. They don't have any from the Hezdi over the teachers
yet. Who, where?
In the Hezdi Yeshivas.
No, that's changed. That's 10 years ago. That's changed. You're living in the past. Of course you're living in the past. That's exactly what I'm telling you. That it's changed. There's a new generation. The Hezdi Yeshivas have raised... The Hezdi Yeshivas have raised their own Talmidei Chachamim, and their own Talmidei Chachamim are the ones who are staffing their own yeshivas, and they have established their own tichonim. I mean, I'm not a poet. I mean, I grew up in the other yeshiva world, but they have been living the lie for a long time that Torah belongs to them. Chassidim don't have Torah. The Sfardim, what are you talking about? They're jungle bunnies. They don't have Torah, right? Okay. The Tzionim, the Zionists, the Mizruchanikim certainly have Torah. In other words, for 30, 40 years, we've been told that a very select group of Ashkenazi Lithuanian yeshivas are the repository of all of Torah. And if you don't fit in, if you're not an Aryan, you know, a blonde, blue-eyed Litvak, you'll never amount to anything. And it's not true. Torah was given to all of Klal Yisrael. It's given to all of Klal Yisrael. It doesn't belong to any elite. And that elite now is beginning to learn that there's an explosion of Torah learning across the length and breadth of this country, and Torah is not their little fiefdom. And that there are great Talmidei Chachamim that are coming out, yes, I will even admit, from the Sephardic world, and from the Mizruchi world, and from all of that. Torah belongs to everybody. Oh, I'm going to need a week's vacation after this. I'll tell you, I don't think, Jackie, I don't think that the neshama of your mother, Allah Shalom, would have minded this at all. As a postscript to this year, I just want to say that when I came home, all of a sudden, a thought struck me that I had said some years ago and forgot all about it. An answer to a real response to why they didn't make a yontif, why Ezra and Nehemiah didn't make a yontif when they came into Eretz Yisrael. And then I think to myself, I must tell Sarah Eiferman, and I have to go to the doctors. I got into my car and I'm driving along Katzen Ellenbogen, and there's one car coming toward me, and that's Sarah Eiferman. I stopped my car, she stopped hers, and I said, Sarah, the real answer to the question is what I said. I said that for independence, you make a yontif. And the fact is, when Ezra and Nehemiah came in, they weren't independent, but when they got independence, which was on Hanukkah, they made a yontif with hallel, with a bracha. And...